Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we say each week, each conversation includes you. If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, you can call us at 877-941-3689. And if you're listening to the live stream someplace else, that number works too. Now, you can probably list how healthcare has changed since you were small. Now we talk about the patient-centered medical home, meaning the coordination and the communication of care by healthcare providers for a patient. That team could include a community health center these days. And if you're thinking that would especially target poor patients, homeless people, and students, well, you wouldn't be far wrong. But a community health center is also the first place, sometimes the only place, to turn in rural areas in Hawaii. Throughout the state, there are 14 health centers, with a 15th under development in Wahiwa. Last year, health centers provided services to just under 150,000 patients, or nearly one out of every 10 residents. Yet we often fail to talk about health centers as one of the largest providers of direct primary medical services. With changing demographics, some people still without insurance, plus the ongoing doctor shortage and the difficulty of finding a doc who takes Medicaid patients, well, access to health care often means a packed community health center waiting room. Tonight, we'll get a status report on Hawaii's community health center system and look at some of the legislation to broaden services and to outreach, especially to youth. Our panel tonight includes Sheila Beckham. She's the executive director of Waikiki Health. She administers all aspects of Waikiki Health and oversees the agency's growing family of primary care clinics and outreach programs. They especially target medically underserved populations. Dr. David DeRuff is here, too. He is the executive director of Kukua Kalihi Valley. He is a physician and has seen many changes since he first came to work at Kukua Kalihi Valley in 1989. His work focuses on the ways health and healing occur in the community, both within the four walls of a clinic and outside them. And our panel concludes with Dustin Stevens, Public Affairs and Policy Director for the Hawaii Primary Care Association. It's an advocacy organization that works to expand access and high-quality health care through the statewide network of community health centers. And, of course, you're here, too. And, again, if you'd like to join us, our number is 941-3689. Or 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much, Bethany.
Thank you.
I'd like to go right around the table and just get each one of you to give us a snapshot of how you see community health centers right now and some of the changes that we've seen just over the last year. So, Dr. DeRuff, I'll start with you.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting us on the show to talk about the work we do. As you said, about 1 in 10 of Hawaii residents get their care at Hawaii's community health centers. I'm incredibly proud of the work we do. I think it has been said, and I think it's true, that one of the shining lights in American healthcare today is the network of community health centers across the United States. There's now about 1,200 health centers nationwide. One of the best parts of the Affordable Care Act was a commitment to strengthening our community health centers. We provide quality of care that I think is second to none. And while we do focus our services on those who otherwise would go without health care, really we're community health centers and we're there to provide care to everyone in our community. So in a given morning in the clinic, I might see a UH professor and my next patient might be a homeless patient. But it is that mix of people who make up Kalihi Valley in our case. That's a really important thing. I think sometimes people think we're only there for the poor and homeless. We're not. We're there to serve the health of our communities. I like to think of us as centers for community health because health really begins where you live, work, and play. It's said that your zip code is actually more important for your health than your genetic code.
In fact, we did a piece about that when one of those last studies came out. That's quite entirely true. Sheila Beckham.
Yes, and again, thank you for having us here. I feel very, very passionate about what I do, what we do for our community. And we have been growing and expanding and adding new services from primary care to behavioral health to things like optometry. We have also a specialty clinic, which is HIV medicine. And so that's another sort of niche that most places don't have. In looking at the patient profile that we might be seeing, likewise, we might be seeing somebody who had been a city council member, somebody who is a professor as well. We might be seeing somebody who is, a financier, somebody who's got some money. And yet then we see the person that just really loves the services that we provide and has found a home of sorts. Partly because maybe our medical director's been there for 30 years, and partly because of the compassion and the love and the care that is given. And so the staff is amazing. So it's amazing to go to work every single day.
Not many people can say that. Dustin Stevens, that brings us to you.
Good evening, and thank you for having us here this evening. I won't try and go into the community health centers themselves as much as my two colleagues here, because they can speak to the programs and that side far better than I can. I like to come at it from the health or the PCA standpoint and kind of say that in the last few years that I've been here, we've kind of been trying to rebrand what community health centers are in the state. Originally, they were kind of seen as a safety net provider. And to us, they're more of a backbone. They're really an essential provider. As you mentioned, that we see 150,000 people each year. But more than half of those are Medicaid patients. We see over a third to 40%, depending on the numbers you look at, of the Medicaid population, virtually all of the COFA migrants, a large percentage of the homeless population. In fact, if you look at the last couple of years, if you compare the number of homeless we see to like the point in time count, we're seeing up to 150, 160% of them. So that's really what we are trying to push to just the essential nature of the community health centers. For that reason, I think that some of the challenges we face also ensure that we will be here for a long time to come as well.
All of you have made the point that the people that you see aren't necessarily the typical, stereotypical idea of someone who goes to a community health center. That said, does it make it difficult to make your case to the community about how essential community health centers really are? Are people too blinded by somehow their stereotypical ideas of community health centers?
I think some people are. And at one point, when I first started working there, we did, an assessment of community members and tried to find out, what people thought of us. And a lot of people had never been inside our building, but they thought we were dumpy and dirty. So we luckily got some funds and we fixed things up, and we try to get out there with our marketing programs and invite people in. And we've really been able to change the tone in the community. And we're looked at by many of the folks in the, tourism industry as being assets to the community.
Dr. Druff.
Yeah, I think the proof is in the pudding. If people can experience the work we do, if they can come in and whether as a patient or as a volunteer or as someone who's taking advantage of some of our other services. As an example, we have a cafe that's the Roots Cafe that's open 2 days a week. The food is exceptional. It's in a lovely environment. People who come in and experience that get a really different sense of what we're all about, and the quality and the attentiveness to caring relationships that go on in community health centers. I think one of the things people, when they look back on the old days of healthcare, was that the quality of those relationships. That's something that was important to us, and we feel somehow that that's missing in our modern day healthcare system. Everybody seems just too rushed. I think people experience that when they come in the doors of a community health center. I know they do at Kukuklee Valley.
Many docs have said that they're really concerned that they only get a set amount of minutes to be able to spend with one patient before they have to go to somebody else and go to somebody else and go to somebody else, and that those are their days, and that they're missing that sense of connection to their patients and the relationship building that happens when you have a little bit more time. I'm hearing all of you talk about the importance of relationships, the feeling that, you're not just treating somebody for physical ailments, but you're also really looking at maintaining relationships with people and giving them that emotional support. How does that translate into better health and better outcomes for the people that you see? Is there any comparative value that you see with what happens in a community health care situation as opposed to if someone just goes off to a doctor and gets his or her 15 minutes?
I think one of the greatest focuses of a community health center is providing augmented services. And we know that, you know, your status of whether you're homeless or not homeless. We know, you know, if you have some behavioral health problems, if you have someone there to help educate you about what's going on with your health. We call them enabling services. If we have language interpretation for folks that, you know, don't speak English as a primary language, that helps, you know, end up with better quality of life, better care, because we're trying to teach the whole person and treat them from head to toe and from inside to outside. You have to make changes within the community in order to be able to really affect, you know, positive health outcomes.
Dustin, she's talking a lot about treating the whole patient. And with the system of health, community health centers, is that really becoming, in essence, the patient-centered home?
It is. But I mean,
we hear so much. I mean, the reason I'm asking is because we hear so much about the idea of, you know, wrapping different people and different services who are all integrated into the care of a particular patient. And from listening to what Sheila and what Dr. Duff all talk about, both talk about, is that there's this sense of whole integration under one roof, which makes it literally a home.
Absolutely. And in fact, the patient-centered medical home is something that we pushed legislatively for the last couple of years now, trying to get state backing for that, because research has shown that oftentimes, especially with the population that we often see, that you're not going to get them in the door near as often as you are maybe some other patients, some higher-income patients. And so it's essential that when you do have that opportunity, that not only can you see, you know, somebody for their dental needs or their physical needs or their behavioral health needs, but that you can also talk to an outreach worker about, are they signed up for Medicaid? Are they eligible for SNAP or TANF or the other wraparound services, the other things that are available to them? Because, you know, if someone is homeless or if they're transient, you might not see them again, and it's really essential to get all of that, you know, when you can, when they're in the door.
And how do you keep track of all that information so that it can be shared? I mean, we know that when outreach is done, there's now a standardized instrument. People have a pretty good idea of what they're asking and why and where they're going and who they're seeing. But so that you can track all of that, how do you measure, or not measure, but how are you able to know that you're keeping appropriate track of someone that you say may be transient?
Basically, we all use an electronic medical record, and we use the same medical record system in our medical mobile unit, in our vans, in any outreach capacity at every clinic. So all of our care coordinators, all of our health educators and registered dietitians, they're all using the same system so that they can document after they see these patients and communicate to somebody else. So it's transparent, and it's
And that's the positive side of it. But you were talking about some of the changes that have come into healthcare, and that there is also a negative side to that, which is that I know my patients sometimes wonder why I'm spending more time looking at the computer screen than I am looking at them directly, and that's been one of the profound changes that's happened in healthcare over the last few years, is that doctors are spending a lot more time, nurses as well, documenting in electronic format, and it has gotten in the way of our patient relationships. Mm-hmm. So we're now struggling with ways to change that. I use a medical scribe, someone who can do that inputting into the computer so that I can have that face-to-face time with my patients. That's one way we're tackling that. But the other thing is that there, in addition to electronic health records, there's been just a litany of new programs, oftentimes mandated from outside of our own health centers, federal mandates, state mandates, funders mandates to perform certain new quality programs and the like. And so doctors really although we're tasked with becoming patient-centered, which really means listening to why the patient's there, what is their story? What is it that brought them in to see you? What do they want you to know about them? So often we're so busy checking off boxes that we're required to fill. And so I think those go hand in hand. The electronic health record and all of those requirements have gotten in the way of good patient relationships, and we have to be really careful about that. I think most of the listeners are experiencing that with their own physicians now. They're experiencing that the visits seem more rushed, that maybe the physician doesn't have as much time to spend with them as they would like. I think it's important for people to start asking their physician that question. Why is it that that's happening? Because the doctors don't want it to be that way, too. I think there's an increasing awareness that we need to change that, that we really need to get back to investing in really that time that we can spend giving our undivided attention to the person who's there with us.
And, of course, that comes in direct conflict with what happens with all of the healthcare management.
Right.
That's trying to move through as many people as possible. And optimize
right.
profit.
Right. Profits and efficiency are two words that don't fit well in the lexicon of giving good care, I would say.
Well, I agree. And for me, one of the things, too, is that not only are you, you know, you have less time to talk to your patients, we're having to hire more and more staff that are not clinicians, but they're basically needing to document and do the data mining for, you know, proof that you are being accountable. And the original patient-centered medical home that we all, you know, operated, you know, decades ago is, you know, we're losing that, and we want to make sure that we keep it because it is really critical for the patients to feel that they are the center, because they are. And it's, you know, what do they need to make themselves better?
Maybe that includes you. And if you have a question about community health centers, we're taking a look at them tonight. Regardless where you may be throughout Hawaii, there are centers and there are clinics strewn throughout our state. If you've had an experience with one, if you've chosen to go to a clinic instead of perhaps a traditional medical center or a doctor who maybe has a freestanding office, we'd like to hear from you, too. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. To hear the people around my table tell it tonight, there's a lot more patient interaction with care providers happening under their roofs than perhaps you may be experiencing. We want to hear what your experience is. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. And if you're a shy person and you don't want to go on the air, you can talk to David, our engineer, and he'll be happy to send your question. And some people are shy, you know. We have to account for shy people. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We've talked a long time, for years, decades, about where we were going medically and the fact that we have a doctor shortage and a healthcare provider shortage. And did we need to have more nurse practitioners? And what were the barriers to all of these people staying in our state? As you see the crunch happening outside of your doors and certainly watch what happens under your roof, how is that playing into this? And are you able to find enough qualified staff who are mission-driven and who want to stay there even though they know that they might not make as much money?
Yeah, this is a great question, and it's something that we are facing. We've been fortunate for the last 4 years of our existence to be able to find those mission-driven people. But given the increased cost of living here in Hawaii, it's one thing to be mission-driven. It's another to be able to afford moving here if you don't live here already. The first thing that happens when we recruit is people come and they look in the newspapers to check on rental prices, and then they ask what our salary is, assuming that we must pay commensurately more. And when they find out we're actually paying about 30% less than they would be making on the mainland, that's really the end of the interview.
You pick them up off the floor.
Right. It is a great challenge for us. We have to be really thoughtful about that. This is not just a challenge for the health centers. This is a challenge for our whole health system in Hawaii right now. A lot of doctors, the baby boom generation is going to be retiring soon. Mm-hmm. That we don't see a steady increase in the number of primary care doctors that we're going to need to meet the demands of those baby boomers as they become elderly and need more care. We're going to be facing a real crunch here. Yep.
Dustin, weigh in on this, because with the Hawaii Primary Care Association, I can't imagine that this isn't an issue that you are talking about all the time.
It really is, and it's something that comes up every year at the legislature. There's always different kind of ideas that are being bandied about, new scholarship programs at the medical school, new kinds of National Health Service Corps scholarships and things like that. I think what we hear more than anything is, especially on the neighbor islands, is it's really tough at our smaller centers getting folks to come and to stay longer than a year, 2 years, whatever they need to pay back some student loans or be on their way, get that experience. So I think that this is something that the people are acutely aware of, but it's still in that developmental, what do you really do about it? You can't really change the cost of living here, as Dr. Duroff said. You can't, you know, the health centers can't suddenly start paying a tremendous amount more. So they're trying to find that middle ground. There's a lot of ideas being kicked around at the moment, but as far as, you know, concrete steps moving forward, it's still tough going.
Any ideas that you think have some legs or that you might want to, you know, try out a little bit?
Some more than others. I mean, I think residencies is they're woefully short in some areas here especially. And so I think just getting people here and getting them into the system and practicing, because a lot of studies have shown that wherever somebody does their residency, they're 80-90% is likely to stay. And so if we can just get that younger crowd of physicians and practitioners into the state, I think we can hang on to them. It's just drawing them out here originally because, you know, UH has a medical school. They do a fantastic job, but there's a limited number of people that are here, and it's certainly not meeting the growing demand.
Yeah, so you're trying to tap into the northern exposure factor.
Certainly.
One of the things that we do is we often have hired, like, nurse practitioners, PAs, and even physicians, you know, when they're just completing their, you know, their programs and their boards, and some of them aren't licensed yet. But we bring them, I mean, we don't bring them on board yet, but we give them an offer. And the general thing that we do is we let people know what the salary is before we bring them in for an interview. And so we put it out there. And if you're interested, then you'll come in. And this is non-negotiable. This is where you're going to start. So it's, yep. And we've been pretty successful by giving a lot of, you know, opportunities for training on site. But again, it takes a toll on our, you know, the specific physicians that do the, you know, the mentoring. So,
but that mentoring piece is really important. And starting at a young age, even as young as high school students in our community, and trying to find career pathways for those people from our communities to become healthcare professionals is obviously the long-term solution here. We really want, ideally, we would want clinicians from our community being coming back to the community to work with their families and neighbors. That's a much longer solution. It takes an investment up front in a lot of hand-holding and introducing people to the work we do, helping them to get through that lengthy process of matriculation into health profession school and then coming back to us. But that has worked for us over the years. The best sort of hire we have are people that we've known as students for a long period of time. Students, residents, and then coming back to work.
If you're just joining us tonight on Town Square, we're talking about Hawaii's community health center system. And if you've had some experience with a health center or a clinic, we'd like to hear from you. As you may have heard, if you were with us a little earlier in the program, 1 in 10 residents walks into a community health center and is served there. Not necessarily just populations that you might instantly think of, people who don't have a lot of money, people who may be homeless, maybe students, but other people who just choose the environment of a community health center for emotional reasons, for the fact that they get a little more attention. Is that you? We want to hear from you. If so, and we'd also like to know if you'd consider going to a community health clinic or center instead of doing whatever it is you're doing now. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Tonight, our panel includes Sheila Beckham, the Executive Director of Waikiki Health, Dr. David Duroff, the Executive Director of Kokua Kalihi Valley, and Dustin Stevens, the Public Affairs and Policy Director for the Hawaii Primary Care Association. All of them are deeply embedded in what's happening with the community health centers statewide, particularly if you're on a neighbor island. We'd like to hear your story. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We were just talking about challenges that you have in staffing. Do you have a sense of what your attrition rates are? And with clinics in general, as you were mentioning, Dustin, that when you're talking about those who are out in rural communities where someone is out there maybe for a couple of years, they're trying to defray some of their, their medical education costs, and then they're gone. That sounds like a fairly quick turnover, which thwarts the whole idea of relationship building. Do you know what the attrition rate is for any of you?
I do.
You do? Okay.
We've been tracking it for the last couple of years, and it differs based upon the position. And so we run a shelter. We've got a youth drop-in center, a pregnant women's drop-in center and clinic for meth-addicted women, and then regular other clinics besides our homeless clinic. So it differs based upon the types of clients and based upon the types of personnel that are there. Sometimes when we're so desperate to hire somebody, I say I'm not giving you the number yet, but we're so desperate to, hire somebody, we hurry into getting somebody on board rather than finding the right fit. And every time that we've, hurried up to get somebody and we haven't, found the right fit, we find that those people don't necessarily stay. It's like sticker shock. They don't understand. We track it. We have monthly tracking. So we've actually had some months that we've had 30% turnover. We've had others that we have, less than 10. And so it depends upon the month and it depends upon the department. But it is something that we have that's really important to continue to track.
And David?
Well, I think nationally, if you look at community health centers, physicians stay on average somewhere between 3 and 4 years. In our health center, I'm happy to say, some of our clinicians have been there, myself included, over 20 years. Our former dental director, who's hopefully going to be joining us on the show in a little while, is he's been there almost 40 years with us now. So
that's mission driven.
That's mm-hmm. mission driven. Yeah, I think on average we're probably closer to 7 to 10 years for our medical providers. So we're doing pretty well in that regard. That really reflects the type of people who come to work. But it remains a challenge. There are more patients that need to be seen and served. That means more clinicians. And inevitably, people are going to move on for a variety of reasons. And it's important to be able to replace them with capable, competent, caring physicians and not to have to do that, because there's a great cost in that sort of turnover, too. And families want that sort of generational care. It begins to really work when someone comes in to see me who they know I've taken care of their grandmother or even their great-grandmother.
And that gives you an insight, too, that someone else
incredible
might not have.
Incredible insight that someone else won't have. And they won't have that in the emergency room or a walk-in clinic. Earlier you asked about that. What is that difference of that relationship? An example comes to mind of a patient of mine, a young man who had a terminal illness who was admitted to the intensive care unit recently. And he was on life support. And the doctors there, appropriately, I think, wanted to end life support for him. They thought he only was facing a future of tremendous suffering should they continue care. But the family didn't know them at all. The family really thought, are they making this decision because they just want to save money on our son or brother? When I went in to talk to them and I was able to tell them about the conversations I'd had with this young man about the end of his life and what he wanted, and because they knew me and they'd known me for years, they were able to make that decision very easily, actually.
That's called trust.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're trusting that if you would like to join this conversation, you will do it soon because the phones are lighting up. We're going to go first now to Alice calling from Palolo. I should tell you the phone number, 941-3689, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, use that number. And from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Aloha, Alice, and thank you for your patience.
Oh, yeah, aloha. Thank you for a great program. And actually, I was also calling to thank these providers because I love my healthcare center, and I've been going to it for many years, from a long time ago when I really needed the help and was poorer, but now by choice, and I raised my family, and I love the comprehensive care offered. I can get my eyes cared for, and my doctor's there, and my kids got care. So I'm just thankful, and I wanted to see that. And then I wanted to make a comment about the shortage of healthcare providers. Do you think it would be possible to start some kind of community program where there would be like a kind of like community health providers, maybe not trained as doctors, but like as first screeners or somebody? I'm thinking of like barefoot doctor type of model, or even a partners in health kind of thing, where somebody could get some kind of training and be like a somebody who would refer a more serious case to a doctor. But I mean, I think it would be wonderful. And also, would you maybe think of expanding traditional healthcare providers like herbalists, like la'au, la'au specialists, or from other Pacific Island traditions or Asian traditions or whoever's here?
All right, Alice, we're going to get you a lot of answers to all those questions. Thanks very much for calling, and great that you have had such a good experience with your family over many years by choice. So she's asking a lot of questions. First of all, let's get to the one about having certain people trained to be able to do specific things and then know when to turn it over to somebody else. I don't know whether Alice was talking about someone who would be doing that in a paid position or as a volunteer. Either way, what do you think of her idea, and is it already happening?
It is. It's a great idea. It's not just a nice idea. It's a critical idea, actually. And yes, it is already happening. It's not happening in the scope or scale that it needs to happen, but there is work underway to support that. I mean, I think that happens in a variety of ways. Some of those people are called community health workers. In a Latina culture, they would call them promotora. It's very clear that most of what brings health happens in the community, happens in people's homes, happens in their families, doesn't happen in the four walls of a doctor's office. So the extent that we can go out into the community and be present in that way, the way a community health worker who maybe really understands that community, its culture, its language, its habits, has the access into people's homes, that's really an important direction to go. And health centers have been doing that for some time. And there's now work underway to make that a more formal part of our health system. It's happening slowly. There isn't enough support for it yet, but I think we'll be seeing more of it because I think the results of that are going to really be positive.
The overall necessity of having to have people.
Yeah. And the second part of our question, if I can just jump to that. Yeah, I think as a Western-trained physician, I'm absolutely supportive of other ways that people support their own health through la'au, la'pa'au, through massage, through meditation, through a whole host of ways. Health is not a product of just doctors and dentists. Doctors and dentists are incredibly important when we're suffering, when we're in pain, when we're seeking relief of that. But actually what makes up our health is those relationships we have with our family and our neighbors, our own sense of self-worth, and a variety of ways that we seek to heal ourselves that we always have as human beings. So those aren't new strategies, certainly. I think what's new is that the recognition that they need to be integrated and made more important in our current system.
With more people to do it. Sheila Beckham, what about with you?
At Waikiki Health, we actually have a full-time Native Hawaiian healer who sits on the team of medical providers. She is part of the HIV team. She is part of the pain management team. And she does do la'au la'pa'au. She grows a lot of her own herbs there and she at the health center. And she works with David's clinic as well to get some different, herbs and different plants. We have a reciprocal relationship, the medical providers and the Native Hawaiian healer work in tandem and they work together and are fully integrated. And actually, in terms of the community health worker program, there is a new initiative to have the state license it. And I know that the Primary Care Association is moving in that direction.
It doesn't speak to that a little bit because that's where I wanted to go next with some of this, is that clearly you got to have people and you've got to have people who are trained and integrated into the system. But you're going to have to provide that training.
Absolutely. And that was a fantastic question because it's really very timely right now. as you know,
and we honestly don't know the person who called.
No.
Well, you know, Dr. Judy Moore Peterson just came out here from Oregon last year, and as the new Medicaid director, she has some experience with this, and so it's really kind of jump-started that community health worker conversation in the state. As Sheila mentioned, we're partnering now with the Capulina Community College to kind of start putting together a curriculum and a program that'll train these individuals. I know at the Wai'anae Coast Comprehensive Health Center, they've been training these folks for a number of years as well. And what it is basically is we're trying to make community liaisons, people that are familiar with the communities, have been living there all their lives, that know where the services are, that, you know, an auntie and uncle that can go up to somebody and talk to someone and say, this is who you need to speak with, this is what you need to do, the kind of thing that most normal person might not know of their own volition. And then something else that's going on at the moment that's kind of an offshoot of that is there's the CARE Act going on, which is a new push in the state for family caregivers, for the elderly, for people who are disabled, for coming off of surgery and that kind of thing. And they're trying to get more care, more training for the home because, you know, in the state, more than $1 billion in quote-unquote, you know, uncompensated family caregiving is being done each year. And so we're trying to give people the skills to do that because especially in Hawaiian culture, that family healing and that family togetherness is a huge part of the system.
AARP has been instrumental in that one, too.
Absolutely.
And we're going to be talking about the future of long-term care in the not-too-distant future. But for tonight, we're talking about what's happening in Hawaii with community health care centers. And if you've had an experience with one, if you've made the choice to do or to have your health care come through a health care center, a community center, rather than going to a traditional doctor or a traditional medical practice, we want to hear from you, too, and know why. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you're on the Neighbor Islands in particular, is this really the one-stop shop for you? Is this the way that you can know that you have full health care, maybe behavioral health care as well, that's not too far from home? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Maggie calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Maggie. Thanks for your patience.
Oh, hi. Yes, thanks. I'm a provider at a healthcare center on Oahu, and I'm very interested in staying at the healthcare center, but often I see the providers, it's a high overturn rate, and also there's more of a punitive versus a thanks for being provider and providing for these high-risk populations on Oahu, and thank you for doing the due diligence. And I've had many patients come into our clinic and saying they are very happy with our care and very happy with the medications and treatment they've been provided for, but yet they don't follow up with their primary care provider for whatever reason. And I was just interested in what your thoughts are on that as far as retaining good providers, and I'll take my answers to the question off there.
Before you go there, Maggie,
yeah.
Because you are a provider, do you find this emotionally taxing or is this rewarding and fulfilling? Or
it's
maybe a little bit of both?
Probably 50-50, I would say.
All right. Well, thank you for all that you do, and thanks for the call and the question. So how do you answer her?
I think it's the culture that you establish at your health center. We all have to deal with the dollar signs and with, you know, the demand for services, the increased access, and keeping our businesses operating. But I think the most important thing is that our whole entire team is made up of human beings, as our patients are, and we need to be compassionate towards the staff, and we need to give them an opportunity to share if they're not feeling valued. I think there are a lot of things that you can do, and I know that David has, and I know that we have tried to bend over backwards to give as many opportunities as we could to our staff so that they would feel appreciated.
Well, David DeRoff doesn't seem to have a lot of problems with him, with his staff. You're talking about people who have been there 40 years, 7 years, 10 years.
No, but the sense of frustration that I hear there is one that I don't think is unique to the community health centers. I think right now, morale amongst medical providers nationwide is at its all-time low. Rates of suicide are spiking amongst medical providers. There's a whole lot of reasons why medical providers right now are feeling pressure, feeling unloved, feeling diminishing sense of respect. And I think we need to address those quickly. I think we're in a bit of a crisis state. I don't think the community health centers are immune to that. But those pressures are real, as Sheila said. At the end of the day, the source of our revenues does come through patient services. So there is always a sense of pressure that the physicians operate under about how many patients they need to see and the like in order to keep our doors open and the lights on. I think part of our job is to try to shield them from that pressure so that they can do the work that they desperately want to do. All of them came to us for the right reason. They really want to be the best physicians they can be. They want to establish those good, strong relationships. They want to be able to give as much time as possible to each of the patients they see. Doing so sometimes means, though, that they forego a lot of other things, that they might not get home till very, very late at night, that they might not have time to spend with their family, that they might be opening that electronic health record from home and on the weekends spending all of their time doing that rather than spending time with their family. That takes its toll on people. We absolutely as a society need to address what's driving that. I think a lot of what's driving that can be changed.
And we're going to talk about that in just a second, but first we're going to take a call from Christine calling us from it's Christian. Sorry about that, Christian. Waikiki. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. Yes, it is Christian, by the way, but thank you. I just want to let you guys know that I'm a recent client of the Waikiki Health Center. I live in the Tohua neighborhood. I work with the union, so I have really good insurance, and I could probably go anywhere I wanted to, but these guys do just an incredible job, and they make you. I've been going to see Shayna Capona there, and she's just been lovely, and I had high blood pressure. We dealt with that. I had vision that was failing as a result of the high blood pressure, and she got me into a good ophthalmologist, and service there is wonderful, and it doesn't matter what your rate of benefit is or what have you. It's just a good place to go, and I just wanted to tell you guys I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the clinic.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for the call, and you obviously let everybody else know, too, and Sheila, you got a fan.
I really appreciate it, and it brings some tears to my eyes that somebody was willing to take time to, you know, go public with their feelings. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to join the conversation tonight about community health care centers, maybe you've had an experience with one, making choices to do that. As you just heard Christian say, he could probably go anywhere he wanted, but he chooses to go to Waikiki Health. Maybe there's a health center in your neighborhood that you find is a really integral part of your life because of the way you're treated, because of the nature of the relationships. What are those differences? Why did you make those choices? 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. In talking about the services that you all offer, this year one of the big pushes is to be able to add dental to that or get dental back. How is that moving now for you, and do you think that there's going to be a good chance, Dustin, that we're going to see dental added?
I do, for this reason. This is the third, fourth year in a row now we've asked for those funds to be replaced. But this year, Governor Ige put it into the supplemental budget before the session, which is a much different task for us. Instead of trying to introduce a bill and convince folks and get the votes we need and usher it through the process, it's more a matter of now if we have the backing of the administration, we know this is a priority, and it's just kind of helping to usher it through. We've introduced our own bill for those dental funds as well, but it's more of just a talking point. We know that as long as it's there in the supplemental budget, that's where we would prefer it to be, that it's safe for the time being. But we want everybody to continue to have that discussion. We want folks to know about the disparities in oral health in the state and to hear about, like, the Department of Health's oral health report that came out this last fall, really illustrating things like, you know, the likelihood of a tooth extraction or a pregnant woman in a high income versus low income not seeing the dentist, that kind of thing. And so that's really what this session has been about for us, is just making people aware and letting them know, you know, how dire the need is in the state.
A lot of people tend to sort of, you know, poo-poo dental stuff and see it as being an extra or not a necessary thing until something goes wrong, and that something can be protracted and turn into something else entirely more difficult that could have been prevented simply way back when. Are people beginning to understand that, particularly lawmakers, as this case has been made now for, you know, three, 4 years?
They are. And as I said, I think the report in the fall really helped with that because, you know, it really lists some really glaring statistics about things in the state. And then
we'll share a few of those.
41% of pregnant women in Hawaii are likely to see from a high income area are likely to see a dentist versus only 27% from low income areas. More than half of individuals from low income areas are likely to lose teeth in any given year as compared to 30% from their high income counterparts. And it's not just with that. Even in with children who have CHIP coverage, Hawaii is one of the lower states for the students, the children who actually utilize it. And a large part of that is because, well, as Dr. Dorff alluded to, generational care. It's the same thing with going to see a doctor. If a parent doesn't make it a priority, if they're not getting the dental care they need, the child is more than a third less likely to go get what they need. And so when you don't start at a young age, when you graduate out of CHIP, you've already got problems and it just gets progressively worse.
You seem to be making the point, though, that by having that generational connection through, you know, your health center, that it's much easier to be able to establish the trust and much easier to be able to do that. So it really seems to be how do you make that relationship work?
Right. Right. Again, the cost of it is just one more barrier. None of us really want to go to the dentist. I mean, except when we're in great pain, maybe we know we have to. But if on top of that sort of lack of desire to sit in a dental chair, we add on the prospect of large dental bills because there's no money to pay for that, that, you know, it just makes it all the more likely that people won't get the care. It seems to me just absolutely incredible that just this historical happenstance that these two fields got separated a couple hundred years ago. And so that we're now in the position where one of the most important organs in our body, the mouth, which is in close proximity to our brain and to our heart, and which contributes to our ability to be productive members of society, to have good relationships with each other, is the central part of the beginning part of our good nutrition for our body. It's just incredible to me that we have somehow walled that off and said, well, that organ doesn't count. We're not going to take care of that. So that people that we routinely see in the clinic have had chronic, severe infections in their mouth. These are people who are really suffering. They're suffering. We now know that their heart health suffers, that their kidney health might suffer, pregnancies may suffer. So there's great cost to this. That's the other aspect that we found out in the report is that the emergency room utilization for this is substantial. Really, people can't get care for their mouth, so they end up in the emergency room. And we know that emergency room services are tremendously expensive.
Can you put a figure to that? Just to give it some fullness here, because when we say that it's tremendously high, we know already that people use ERs because they can.
It's up to about 8.5 million now. And as recently as 2006, it was only at 4 million. I mean, the number of visits themselves have grown over 67%, which is well ahead of the national average.
If you're joining us now, we've been talking about the impact of not taking care of certain things like oral health, particularly if you're talking about populations that are challenged, that are at risk, that simply don't feel that it may be important, and what that means to the rest of us. Well, you just heard Dustin Stevens tell us about that. Our number, if you want a number, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're talking about community health centers, the services they provide statewide, which may be very different from your concept of what a community health center does. People who are making the choices to go there because it may be a little more friendly or emotionally satisfying, or just that there may be more time spent and that there's a greater sense of integration of all services or most services that one might need. Maybe that includes you. If you're making the choice to go to a health center, we want to hear from you. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Or would you even consider making a choice and going to a health center in your community? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. None of the things that we've been talking about tonight exist in a vacuum. And certainly, Dr. Dorff, as you've been talking about, the idea that we would extract oral health from the overall well-being and integrated health idea seems to be rather ridiculous, and yet we do. We talk about medical, and then we talk about dental. How do you see that gap being bridged, and how do we begin to understand that none of this stuff is just in isolation, or as you like to talk about, happening if within the walls of your community health center, but that health is really the matter of what happens on a day-to-day basis outside in the community with people and relationships and the sense of connectedness.
Yeah, thanks. That's a wonderful question. And, you know, we're fortunate that in the English language we have an important reminder for that, although most of us don't stop and think about that. The word health itself literally means wholeness. We unfortunately have come to conflate health with health care and then ultimately with health insurance, which is just a very small part of the overall picture of health. Certainly we need access to high-quality health services. All of us should have that. But that isn't the greatest contributor to health. The greatest contributor to health are those connections that you just mentioned. In our community, when over the last couple of years, we've really had a careful conversation with many members of our community to ask, what is it that they think of when they think of health or its absence? And all of those conversations pointed out that people really think of four connections in their life. The first one is a connection to place or to the land. For Hawaiians, that's an aina connection. That's a kinship relationship. The oldest member of our community is quite literally the land there. Second one is a connection to your neighbors and to your family members. The third one is a connection to your past and to your future. What is your kuleana? What is your sense of responsibility? What are you going to carry on into the world? And finally, that connection to your better self. What is the gift that I have to share with my community? We find that when people talk about health, those are the things that they talk about. I think in Hawaii, we have a tremendous opportunity to go back and rediscover how important those things are.
We've got some callers on the line. I think you've struck a nerve there. Kamalani calling us from Hawaii Kai. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, thank you.
Hi there.
I was just kind of reiterating what he was just saying. I volunteer up at Ho'olulu Aina whenever I can. It's part of the KKV in the back of Kalihi Valley. And just seeing healthcare being something more than just taking a pill and solving your problems. It's a lot about wholeness, like what he was saying, and seeing people's self-worth blossom and, you know, really take concern over their own healthcare, planting a plant that will then be used as food for Roots Cafe. It's a beautiful thing to see transform inside people.
It's more than just sort of this consumerist attitude that we've been told that we should take toward our health care. It really seems to be far more than that, but yet we don't talk enough about that. I'm glad you are. Thank you so much for calling us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your help up in the land there, Kamalani.
And going now to Rick calling us from the Windward side. Aloha, Rick. Welcome to Town Square.
Yeah. It's really appreciated the people that are sacrificing to help indigent, you know, and whatever, because an enlightened society has a safety net. And, like, for example, some of the poor people, will, you know, they don't get a tooth replacement or a cap. They get, you know, removal. They pull the tooth out. So, but they get some care. But it could be, why is there such a division in the health care, like, so the rich can have the perfect care and the poor. So, you know, thank you for that. An enlightened society. And then, like, I don't see the Syrian refugees wanting to go to India or Africa or where you're on your own. There's no safety net. Where do they want to go? Okay, thank you.
All right, Rick, thank you. Well, I mean, making the point that when you don't have any of that, this looks pretty good. But he's really getting to the disparity of, you know, why is it only this care? When you look at all the benefits in some of the programs that people get through Quest and whatnot, that there is a real difference, and there are waiting periods and things that look very different than what your insurance might be if you're getting it through your employer.
It's true, but we did have Medicaid dental in 2009. And what we're asking the legislature to do is to just restore it, give it back, you know, because our folks that now have, this is the seventh year that they have been without, you know, assistance. I mean, they can't have preventive services. They can't have restorative. It's just pretty much emergent services. And so it isn't anybody's fault. I guess people decided, oh, this is a good way to save money. And the bottom line is that, you know, the majority, 90% of the funds come from the federal government to support the Medicaid program. So it isn't a huge amount of money.
But it's going to be huge later on if it festers and it turns into something else.
Exactly. One of our board members had lost all of his teeth because of various health issues, and he had nowhere to go. He had no money to replace his teeth, and he was hoping to go back to work. And so he ended up finding three different agencies that would help him with dentures. But, I mean, this took him almost 2 years. So I think it's just imperative that we restore it.
When you talk about restoring that, and Dr. Duroff, you were talking about not having different parts of the body siloed, particularly the mouth and everything else, how do we do a better job of understanding how we need to integrate our own good health into our way of being and our lifestyle and our attitudes toward health, and not just, hi, I've got this wrong, or hi, I have that wrong, but understanding a little bit better how we need to regard our life and our lifestyle?
I think ideal place for that conversation to take place is amongst people whom you have a strong relationship with. I don't think we stop and think often enough about what it is that makes us healthy. I think if we have a chance to really reflect on those times that we're most healthy, we come away with a different sense of it than this crisis sort of sense about going into the emergency room or a doctor. Clearly, when you're suffering from chronic disease, it's a different matter, and that need for attentive care. But even there, those other factors in your life are going to play in a great way. Who are you spending time with? Are you able to share healthy food with someone on a regular basis? Is there an opportunity in your life to storytell? Are you able to continue to contribute to society and to your community in some way? Those are the things that, and I think in Hawaii we haven't forgotten that. We're really lucky to live in a place that those values still resonate really deeply through almost all of our communities. It would be a shame if we were to lose sight of that.
We only have a couple minutes left, and as all of you are going to go back out and do the work that you do at community health centers, I just want to just have a final thought from you about what you think the rest of us really need to think about and take away for our own good health, and also understanding the health of our community that in large part depends on the health of your community center.
And I think for me, one of the most important things is your ability to build relationship. And don't selectively choose, to engage certain people and not others. So I think that we need to engage everybody and treat everybody equally.
Sheila Beckham, thank you so much for joining us. And to you, Dustin Stevens, what about with the Hawaii Primary Care Association for a final thought?
Well, we come at this from a little different angle because we're not a direct care provider. But to kind of touch on what you guys have been saying, we see that the relationships that we can build, even in our own capacity, really have a direct effect on health. The social determinants of health are something we've really been aggressively pushing the last couple of years. It's those socioeconomic things, those factors in an environment that affect somebody beyond just the health care they get. Things like the walkability of the streets, their access to vegetables and fruits and things like that. And so, we testify on all these things. We support other groups when they come to us. And we're really just trying to build relationships to push an overall vision of health care.
Thanks so much for joining us. Good
Thank
to have you.
You.
And to Dr. David Duroff, you kind of had a good thought there at the end. I like that one. I think we'll lead with that one as we say goodbye to everyone for this time around. Some of the simple stuff, it really is, it's time-consuming in some cases, but well worthwhile. Thanks so much for joining us tonight for Town Square. I'll see you tomorrow morning for the conversation. In the meantime, have a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.